Hey, Mayo, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Not bad. Tell me about the new 9to5 Mac app.
Yeah, so we launched this a couple of weeks ago. I've been working on it for a little while. It has a refreshed design. Looks all nice. If you didn't know, 9to5 Mac does have an app. It's by default like the a slightly nicer way than reading it in Safari. You can subscribe for a monthly fee and you can remove all the ads and get a nice native experience with the dark theme and stuff like that. But the big new feature in this release is push notifications. So for people that want to be in touch with the latest 9to5 stories, you can just, it's completely free, the notifications. You just update the app, launch the app, allow notifications, and you'll get alerts to your lock screen when we post new stories. And you can choose between like highlights and breaking news or all posts. And simple as that. You can tap through and read them. Carry on with your day.
Yeah, so
to let people know.
So you make the app, like this is one of the apps that you make yourself. And from day one, like we kind of wanted to have alerts, and it wasn't as easy as just like turn it on and do it. We just couldn't have reliable alerts where we post a story and then you get an alert within any reasonable amount of time or ever. And so it took a lot of work on the back end, like from you to A, think about that problem and how to solve it, and then B, to implement it. And I'm happy that we'll be able to do it. And I think otherwise the app was not quite as useful. And you've got two tiers of alert settings. One is for every story, and then one is for like more stories that we think are more important, you know, alert worthy, right?
And that's the default, yeah. By default, you shouldn't get flooded too much. And we're tweaking that. Obviously, it's subjective. There's a subjective like editorial element to what stuff we should push on that first filter and what we shouldn't. We'll be refining that over the next few weeks and stuff. Like, as some stuff gets through the filters, then we tweak it a little bit. But I really wanted to get the update out before WWDC so you can get, you know, breaking news from everything that happens at the conference.
Yeah.
And it's been out for a couple of weeks now, and it seems in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
And you get – the post goes up, you get a notification within a minute, basically.
Yeah, I think it beats this if you do Safari push alerts. I think it beats that by as much as like half an hour sometimes. So good stuff. All right, let's talk about HomePod. 9to5 Mac's Guy Rambo has discovered that HomePod will soon have killer new features, at least one, and that is calendar support. Finally,
woo!
it seems like calendar support will be coming to HomePod. Whenever iOS 11.4 is released, you know, we presume HomePod will have its own software update that maybe makes it work with AirPlay 2 and stereo and multi-room audio. If things go as they currently are in beta, although that's happened and then been pulled back before, so we'll see. But something else that appears in beta is if you set up a HomePod from scratch, you get three icons at the beginning for personal request where you can work with the Notes app, messages, and reminders if your iPhone is on the same network, the person that sets up the HomePod. In 11.4 beta, calendar is an icon added to that list, which strongly suggests that HomePod will finally be able to do what Siri on your iPhone can do, which is tell you about your calendar. So that's exciting.
I mean, last week, Tim Cook on the earnings call said that new features for HomePod were coming soon.
This is what he meant.
Here we go. We got calendar support that's been part of iPhone Siri since 1.0.
Like, this is a Siri feature on the iPhone. The thing that gets me with this the most is that Amazon literally added iCloud calendar support to Echo like a week or two before HomePod was even announced. It was like that was like their preemptive move to just do one more thing to put their thing ahead of Apple's unannounced thing. And then Apple's unannounced thing gets announced like way ahead of time, gets delayed, ships, and then there's like no mention of calendar support. And what bothers me about that is there's so many things that HomePod can't do that Siri on iPhone can do, and Apple doesn't say like why. If it's just a matter of getting around to it, which I think in calendar that seems to be the situation, or if they think it just shouldn't do it, and then you know it's like a matter of opinion, in this case wrong. But hey, they're getting to calendar support. Now you had a theory.
I think this is a pretty surefire indication, right? Like this isn't like a weird reference in the code or something that could be removed.
Right,
like,
right.
They've added an icon to the interface when you set up the HomePod. There was three, now there's four.
Yeah.
And we'll really know that Apple's invested in HomePod when there's two whole rows rather than just four icons. But it's a good start. Like, calendar support is, you know, table stakes, but that's what the HomePod needs a lot of the time at the moment. It's just table stake features, add them on, check them off the list.
Yep.
Like catch, I think we said this on the show before, you only need to check off like 5, 10, and you've covered a lot of the complaints of limited functionality.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't need to target what Amazon Echo can do or what Google Home can do. You only need to target what iPhone Siri can do, and you're in good shape for like a 1.0 kind of thing.
Like a 1.1 update. If you just add 5 new things to the HomePod, most of which the iPhone already does, but you just port it, like starting a phone call, hint, please.
Yeah.
Because the phone call thing really gets me. Like they market it as a speakerphone. And in your brain just twigs, like, I know it doesn't work, but because I talk, when people call me from my office, I just put it onto speakerphone to the HomePod every single time. And then when I want to call someone, I'm like, I talk on the HomePod, I'll just ask that. And it's like, no, you got to start on your phone. Oh, here we go again. Like, it would make me so happy. And the simple fact that they're going to add calendars makes me hopeful that there will be more than calendars in the forthcoming.
Me too, yeah. Yeah,
and more than just AirPlay 2 being added, because that was kind of like the joke last week, is that the new features coming soon might just be multi-room and stereo.
Yeah, what's already been announced and is delayed.
Okay, I want you to predict. Ready?
Uh-huh.
So last year at WWDC, they had a section of the keynote for every single platform. They had a tvOS section, which had nothing in it but Amazon Prime, and then they had bigger sections for macOS, iOS, and watchOS.
Yeah.
This WWDC, do you think they'll have a dedicated section for Siri / HomePod?
Please. If I had to predict, I would say no to dedicated Siri section that they present it as part of iOS, because iOS is expected to have like fewer features than recent years anyway. And so present it as part of like iPhone update. And then also it works on iPad. And then maybe say, and also HomePod. If it also works on HomePod, but I wouldn't be surprised if Siri on iOS gets better than it is now, and it doesn't happen to also go to HomePod, like that it's not on the same development track for some reason.
Now that's going to cause some nice punditry on the day.
That's what I would predict as most likely. Like maybe it's like 51% versus 49%, but I feel like that is what weighs in the more likely camp. Just based on what's been happening so far.
If you'd have asked me before we found this calendar reference, I'd have been pretty strongly on the we're not going to hear anything about it silent. It'd be like last year where everyone's like, where's the big Siri update? But because we've got this, I feel like they're going to have a HomePod section. And I'm not just saying that as an optimistic HomePod owner. I think it's going to happen. And it might not be anything massive. They might say, we've got calendars, we've got AirPlay 2, and we've got something else is better.
So that counts as like what's coming maybe that day or like a couple of days later, but coming now basically, because it's part of 11.4. But what I mean is, like, I don't think there's going to be a section about like crazy new things that Apple's working on for this fall whenever iOS,
like a HomePod beta.
Yeah, like iOS 12 equivalent stuff.
Because
I think that either way we get that stuff and they'll probably talk about it if it hasn't been released yet. But I feel like it's not likely that we're going to see like, you know, HomePod OS 12, whatever they want to call it, Audio OS 12, new features. Even if it's like stuff from Siri on iPhone that it could do, like maybe it won't even be able to do that stuff.
That is definitely less sure.
Unless they add like an audio, a Siri kit domain for audio sources, which is like would be crazy if they did that on iPhone but not on HomePod. Like now, Siri on iPhone can play third party music services and third party podcast players. But not HomePod. Like that would be nuts.
What actually might happen is they have a third party Siri kit thing for audio announced as part of the iOS 12 bucket, and then they say this will come to HomePod later in the year.
Oh, like not at launch? Like not
at iOS 12 like launch, or like they don't have a beta for the HomePod operating system. You can test it on the phone, but it doesn't actually come as a feature to the HomePod until September time.
Because it's a Siri kit app at that point. And what they say to do that is just to use headphones and use Siri through headphones. And that's how you test Siri kit, HomePod. So, okay. I think all of that is like kind of a bummer, because what we want is like a HomePod beta, lots of new HomePod features.
And like HomePod native apps or a HomePod native like SDK thing, but
yeah,
I think that's not, that might be in the works, like internally, but I don't think that's gonna come anytime soon.
Because what the calendar stuff is it's for the single person who sets up the HomePod. It's their calendar, unless they share a calendar with someone else. Like, you know, you do a shared calendar. That's what it's called. But it's only gonna work if your iPhone is on the same network or your iPad is on the same network as your HomePod. If you go away, like, as like a permissions privacy thing, it won't work. And in my case, because like one phone is on a beta and the HomePod's not, it always just says that the device isn't around, and that drives me crazy, but it is what it is. Like the other day, my wife was like, we were like planning a grocery store trip, and she said, you know, Siri, add, and I said, no, wait, because she was talking to HomePod, and I said, it's not going to work. Like, just tell me, and I'll add it to my phone or my watch. Because like it never works, because I'm always on a beta, and for some reason it just says, even when I was on a beta for like a weekend, because everything was new, and there was no beta, I had the same problem where it's like, I can do that, but before I do that, you need to have the you know, the same device. So,
I'll tell you, just the record, I run a beta on my phone, and my HomePod Siri Kit stuff works endlessly.
Really?
Perfectly fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, one second. Let me see if I can – hang on. I've got the hey thing turned off, but let me see if I can do anything about – like, okay. Siri, add milk to the shopping list.
Okay. I added milk to the shopping list.
Well, see, now it's just like in spite of in me, you know, but
– there we go. We fixed it live on air.
I can never – whatever. But anyway, calendar will have the limitation where if you don't have the phone around, it won't work. And it'll only be for that one user, because there's no indication yet of like users, you know, like voice recognition, that kind of thing, per user. So, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah, like anything like multiple – requests in the same thing, or follow up without saying the trigger word, or all that stuff, that's not even in my head, right? Like,
I
am more optimistic in that. I know some people are like, Apple will never catch up. I actually disagree with that, because at some point you're not going to add monumentally new things to an assistant every single year. Like, there's a big gap at the moment, but there'll be a time where it'll have to plateau before we get to like the next fundamental leap forward, and there will be space for Apple if they invest in it. I think they can catch up in those areas. I really do.
Well,
but for this near term, you know, WWC 2018.
This isn't the
what I have in my head as a hope is all the stuff that the iPhone Siri can do, the HomePod can do, and then maybe like an audio SDK so you can do other audio apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that is kind of what's in the possibility space.
Yeah. They, I mean, that's what they did last year, was they added like two or three new domains to SiriKit on the iPhone. Some of those happen to work with HomePod, some of them don't, but we'll see what happens there. But calendar support, it's coming. It's at least one thing that's coming we feel strongly about, so you know, we'll see how that goes. This week, I think Japanese Mac blog, Macatakara, had a report out about the iPhone 10 Plus, or whatever you want to call the 6.5-inch OLED iPhone that's coming later this year, we believe, and a new detail about Face ID. They say that the iPhone 10 Plus, or whatever we want to call it, will be about the physical size of the plus-size iPhones, like iPhone 6 Plus through 8 Plus, except we'll have the all-screen design, which, you know, we kind of take that and just, you know, I don't think there's any like new there. It's just 6.5 inches.
That follows the pattern they did with the iPhone 10, right? Where they took roughly the same 4.7-inch chassis size and put a 5.8-inch screen in it, right?
Yeah, like if you look at a video playing without zooming into it on the iPhone 10, like it's, you get the bezels back is kind of what you get. And you just take the same model for the iPhone 8 Plus and you go all screen, and I think it's going to be awesome. But they also add that they're hearing that iOS 12 will add landscape support for Face ID. And right now, Face ID only unlocks your iPhone, recognizes your face if it's in the portrait orientation on the iPhone. They're
not even portrait upside down, just portrait.
Yeah, yeah. Not on top, not on bottom. There have been different stories about iPad getting Face ID, which I think this is necessary for, unless you're going to put a sensor on every, you know, every angle or every orientation. But I think it might also be needed for iPhone 10 Plus or whatever we call it, because the Plus phones from day one have been able to do a landscape home screen and more landscape app support where they do kind of the split screen thing. And if you do that, you don't want to get stuck in having to rotate your phone back and forth, although you still need to for a lot of Apple apps and third-party apps. But maybe these things are related. Now, I'm curious if this is going to be – I don't think they specify, but like literally iOS 12 is what enables it, you know, and like not new hardware. If so, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it could also mean that the support for the new hardware is in iOS 12.
Yeah, that's true.
If you look at like the IR, like – global or you know the IR projection, if you put a camera up to it and see, at least in terms of what the IR camera's picking up, it seems pretty uniform in like a big circle. It doesn't seem that the current iPhone 10 is preferentially spraying dots in one particular orientation that make it work better in just one way. But on the same axis, then why didn't they have it support landscape last year?
Yeah, so I feel like the phone could. It knows the orientation, so it can know which way to look for the face. Like, you know, what I'm thinking is like maybe it lowers the security like percentage of a wrong match. You know, like your face upside down and someone else's face the correct way or sideways. It just like it's too similar. It could be too similar, and so like you lower the odds of a false match if you only support one orientation. But then the phone could say, I'm in this orientation, not that one. So adjust the map for that. And then, as you said, like the dots, like sprays everywhere, basically. So you're going to get caught in the map and in the dots. Now, and like, I've not had an issue really with like landscape support, like needing to change orientations, like, and finding that to be like a problem. I do have the issue though, where like my phone's too close to my face, like it's like reading distance, you know, but it's too close for face ID to recognize. I think that distance is like, it's too far that you need to have the phone from your face. It should work closer, and it can't yet.
That's like a hardware thing where the length of the dots are spraying to a specific distance, basically.
Right. Yeah. So iOS 12, maybe that's one of the things in iOS 12 is they put on a slide, landscape support. Or maybe it requires new hardware, like you said, and it's just part of iOS 12 to support that new hardware. At any rate, I mean, do you have a sense of like what we expect for iPads at WWDC to be unveiled? And
in terms of hardware,
yeah, like if it's a WWDC thing or not yet.
The general direction of the rumors is that it's a full thing.
Okay, I thought so, and that's been kind of my expectation too. Of course, last year we did get new iPads, but that was after like a year and a half. Or more without updates, like it was kind of necessary. Whereas this year, it doesn't need to be 1 year to the date of the last ones. It can be like a year and a few months. And it also, don't we expect these iPads to be like iPhone 10 inspired, basically? Like,
yeah, I mean, they probably won't have a notch cut out. They'll just have like slimmer bezels on all four sides.
They need a notch, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm imagining is basically you take the 10.5-inch iPad today, and you take the thin bezel sides. And you put them on all four sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you take away, obviously, that takes away the button, and you could put the Face ID sensor and the cameras in just one of those small edges.
Yeah, I think that's very compelling. And I am way, like, my iPad is the first Pro, but the 9.7-inch version. So it's not the latest one. And I'm often tempted by the newer iPads because, like, the promotion stuff, the slightly bigger size for the 10.5-inch one, the much bigger size for the 12.9-inch one. But I feel like these new iPads are going to be like a big leap forward, like in terms of like you don't want to get caught on the last bad one. You want to get the first good one. But all those things, you know, we'll just kind of see. Like, do our iPhones work in landscape now with Face ID, or is this a hardware thing for new stuff coming in the fall? So okay, let's talk about Google I/O for a moment. So. That's Google's equivalent of WWDC, basically, where they announce some new things and then announce their version of like WWDC from last year. You know, like they did Google News this year instead of Newsstand, which is kind of catch up.
Yeah, they retired an app called Newsstand,
yeah,
and they introduced an app called News.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
that was just perfect.
Yeah, they got some Do Not Disturb stuff that Apple's had for a little while. With some like further advances on it, but A lot of catch up there. It's typical. You know, you copy back and forth, and you take a good idea and you do it.
And to be fair, I think this year more than ever, it felt like a lot of stuff they had was stuff that iOS has done for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But equally in previous years, there's been more times when it's like, oh, you know, Apple just brought this stuff over. Mm-hmm. I don't really care. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's funny to tweet about, but like, I'd tweet in the opposite direction on June the 4th as well. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a funny joke, but it doesn't really get on my nerves at all. They did do their equivalent version of the iPhone X gesture system.
Yeah.
So, because obviously the Android phones had software buttons before, but they like emulate a bezel bar. They're like a fake bezel and they just put three buttons on it. And they're migrating to a model where they have two button on a bar. Like, the bar doesn't go away, but you can swipe up to go to multitasking and do this, like, the home button turns into a slider that you can drag along to go back in time to go back to the older app. It's like a Chinese Whispers implementation of the iPhone X one.
Yeah.
Like, not as nice. It is not as responsive. It's not as fluid. But it's exactly what I expected Google would make.
You kind of hear about it, and you're like, you're trying to recreate it, and you can't quite match it, you know. And they even framed it as like a new trend on like bezel-less iPhones or not bezel-less phones or you know phones with less bezel. And then the phone they showed, what was that, Pixel 2 or what was it?
Yeah, it's the Pixel 2, but there's two sizes of Pixel 2, and the smaller one has massive bezels, like iPhone 8. Style bezels,
right?
And that's what they used.
Yeah, so it wasn't quite the best demo phone either. But the thing that, like, if you were following along on Twitter, you know, or I guess watching yourself, then the thing that was not in that category of like, ah, Google's take on this, it was the Google Assistant stuff, which the history here is like, you know, Google had like really good voice search as part of Android. When Apple had like Voice Assistant as part of iOS, and you could do things like open apps, I think, or it was pretty limited, but you could do certain things. Like I think you could call people. But a long time ago, used Android phones, I would often use the Google Voice Search stuff to begin navigation. Like, say, you know, hold a button or whatever it was, and say, navigate to address or business or something. And that was like the thing I use a lot. And then switching to iPhone, I don't know what if Voice Assistant could do that or not, but then Siri came about and it was like a lot more stuff. It was like way ahead of the competitors in that space. And then
and it was taking what Google had in terms of like voice keywords and making it into the, like, Siri is like the first mainstream like conversational. You know, you're kind of talking to a half real person.
Yeah, it had personality, and it was more conversational. It was more natural, less you know the command, use the command, and then, you know, really, like, I think Alexa was kind of like the next thing, like years later, and there wasn't quite the Google Android equivalent, even though they were kind of first of that. That pretty good layer of like voice search of voice activity, but then
they were always really good at like dictation and understanding what you said.
Yeah, parsing it out, and then they did Google Assistant, which is like no cutesy name for it. It's just the Google Assistant proper, and it's I don't use it a lot because I don't use Android and I have a Google Home, but I don't use it for any serious purpose. I only have one. I have a lot of the Echoes. I have, you know, a couple of HomePods and then Siri on all my products. But the Google stuff, I don't touch a whole lot. And it seems to be good at certain things and kind of on par with other things. But the stuff they showed at I/O was like just advanced. Like, people were thinking Alexa needs to catch up with that now, you know. Like the one thing they showed, I think, was not just making a call for you, but like doing your business for you, you know, making it a, like calling a customer service kind of thing and like chatting for you, basically.
Yeah, like the user facing, and this stuff is, from what they said on stage, not coming to an actual device anytime soon. It's still kind of like experimental, but even in the experimental stage, I was like, this is impressive, even if it's just a tech demo.
Yeah,
they called. Basically, you asked the assistant, make me a haircut appointment for Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. And the assistant says to you on the UI, "No problem, I'll let you know in a minute." And then it goes away. While you're just sitting there doing whatever, the phone or the server calls the nearby business and pretends to be a human down the phone.
All right.
It would go like, hello there, can I set an appointment? And then the person, the operator, who doesn't know that it's a computer, doesn't know it's a computer pretending to be a real person, will just act like it was a human setting an appointment. And they go, for what time? And it would go, 2 p.m. And then they go, I don't have anything for 2 p.m. And you go, how about from 10 to 12? And it, you know, go back and forth, creating an appointment at the hairdressers. And the hairdressers doesn't have to have any special software. They're not changing anything. Like, it's really an analog solution to a digital problem, right? Like, yeah. they're doing all of this work to pretend to be a human just to do something which can then just show back on your screen as, I've made an appointment for you.
Yeah, yeah. Even just, like, talking about that out in the open lets us know, like, where their vision is. And I would not dislike if Apple did something similar, where they, even if it's, like, pie-in-the-sky stuff, that they thought they could do eventually. They're just like, look, this is what we envision for Siri. And it's like, ah, there we go. And like, do an actual demo of it, but you can't have it yet. Like, that's still impressive. Like, what do they call it? Google Duplex, I think.
Yeah, they call it Duplex, which is a
weird name.
A weird name, especially if you're duping someone into thinking you're real when you're an AI.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a creepy factor to it. Like, I don't understand why the robot can't call the hairdressers and just say at the start of the phone call, I'm the Google Assistant. Can you make a hairdresser appointment? Because then it would, then after like two or three times, the hairdressers would understand, because it's not like spam, right? It's a real person at the start that, you know, the real person on the Android phone is asked to make an appointment. It's not like a spam phone call calling thousands of people at once.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why this system could not say at the beginning, hello, Google Assistant is setting up an appointment for Claire, right? Claire wants an appointment for Thursday at 12. What have you got? And then it can use the AI understanding to pass the response. And the person, the operator on the other end, knows to use simple language and simple statements because they know it's a computer. I don't see why the burden of pretending to be a real human needs to be... It's almost like over-engineering it and like showing off, like, we can pretend to be a real person. And obviously, the way they make this even possible is by reducing the problem set down to just like booking appointments, essentially, right?
Yeah.
But I don't see why that's necessary. Like, they could just, it could even be a robot and just say, Google Assistant, order appointment for Tuesday, 10 p.m., done. And then the human respondent could say, I've done that. Or they could say, we don't have any availability. And then it could come back with alternative suggestions.
Yeah. You could have
that's
a.
Siri could do. This is what I'm getting at, right? Like, the fancy, oh, we're pretending to be a human person. Yeah, that probably is out of the remit of Apple Incorporated at the moment. But if you had Siri in the background make a phone call for you to the hairdressers and just say, hello, this is Siri, I'm setting an appointment for 12, can you set an appointment for 12 thingy? And it can, and then the person then can go, yes. You're getting the same result as a customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's like we've been trained. We know how to talk to automated voice services. You know, we call customer service stuff. Like, you know, to say simple answers, speak very clearly, that kind of thing. It's like a reverse version of that. And you can have a feature like at any time if this goes wrong, spam zero to get to the actual person. And then your phone rings. It's like, hey, I'm talking to your bot. It's not going well. What do you want? You know, there was a service. You know, the social network Path.
Yeah,
they had a feature. I think it's a separate app, maybe called Path Talk, and they had probably like limited categories that they could work with, but some were retail, and there were people like partners that worked within the category. But I recall like one Christmas using Path Talk to talk to a business, like a local business. It was like a chain, to ask if they had. It might have been like Best Buy to ask if they had a Jawbone Jambox speaker in stock. Like it was. On the website, but I wanted to like verify, and I was using the app to like chat with them, and I think it was like automated where on Path's end they're having something to communicate with the store, and that might have been more like iMessage business chat, you know, I don't know, but it reminds me of that, like Path Talk, you know, where it's like
didn't Facebook have something like this for called like M, and it was like their assistant, but it had real people doing stuff for you on the other end.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the classic Google approach to that, right? Like, mm-hmm. get real people to do it, but make the real people computers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned iMessage Business Chat,
mm-hmm.
because that is a semantic conversation where you're sending, you're not sending arbitrary sounds, right? You're sending like lists of times and lists of products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, this is another way that Apple could tackle this problem, right? Like, if you got a hairdresser to sign up with iMessage Business Chat, and Siri could send them a message for you, they could reply by pressing buttons on the screen of their iPad or whatever that's on their cashier, and they could make the appointments and it could come back that way. Like, I think there are alternative ways of approaching this that don't need the massive horsepower and understanding of a neural network and all that, and, you know, and all of that stuff. Like, I definitely think there are easier ways of approaching this that are in the reach of anyone. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's an unsurmountable issue. The only thing that it does mean that the Google solution has an advantage is that the business doesn't have to sign up for anything, right? So theoretically, it's going to support any business in the world. But that's not really true, because this AI is not going to be good enough to handle situations. Yeah, so there's going to be times when it will have to say, I don't understand what you mean. I'm connecting you to the person that made the actual human that made the request in the first place.
Yeah.
And obviously on the stage, they only show the times when it works. And I think it's very telling that the feature is not announced to be coming out anytime soon, because there are probably a lot of times when stuff goes wonky. Like, they give you a few demos of more complicated requests and answers, and it is impressive, but the scope that it has to cover to be a convincing human is just massive, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Infinite ways that someone could say something and it wouldn't have a clue. And then it'd be like just making a phone call for you, and you have to end up talking to someone.
Yeah. The thing about iMessage Business Chat that I think makes it where we will see that in the wild, like, way more often than not. And we're already seeing, like, it's live as part of iOS 11.3, and we're already seeing it used by a few businesses. But I think it'll be really easy for more companies to jump on board, is because like, Apple's got their end of it, but then the other end of it is like an existing customer service, you know, system that businesses are already using for their website and like online support or remote support. And on their side, they just see it as like one more support ticket, like one more, you know, chat log where they need to respond. They don't know. I don't think they even know it came from iMessage Business Chat, you know. It just looks a certain – it plugs into their existing system, which I think is – like, you're not asking businesses to, like, buy your solution. You're just saying, like –
you don't need, like, a whole second infrastructure just to support this particular thing.
Yeah, you just need to, like, plug into it, basically. And I think that's nice. Because it's like it takes what people already do as businesses with support, and it says, we want to work with what you have and not, you know – is our AI smart enough to outsmart your human, or add this new thing that you don't already use? So, but it's clever. I've not like sat down and watched the keynote yet and like seen the demos. I've just kind of like watched the reaction that came out of it. And so that was one of the things that people got like a lot of attention about. I saw some stuff with, they're going to introduce, encourage kids to say please to their assistant, you know, which is just nice. I think, Amazon has recently introduced a lot of parental controls similar to that. I'm not sure if that's like something I mean, I'm a parent. I'm not sure I don't know how effective – I don't know how effective it is, like, versus like just like having the conversation. But
I think it's very gimmicky. Like,
yeah.
Every time you talk to the assistant, you have to say please at the end, and it's going to make kids understand manners. I don't really buy that.
Yeah. Like please is not it needs to mean something. I just feel like part of the trigger word. Although I tweeted a few days before this event happened that I just observed that my 5-year-old daughter will say please whenever Siri on the HomePod won't recognize her. Like it works with her voice a lot of times, but not always, especially if music is playing. And I can't quite coach her on how to say the phrase the right way. And I think it's just her 5-year-old voice and everything. But she'll start to add please to their command, thinking like that will make it work, which I think is just awesome. But if it was an option, I'm not sure I'll like toggle it on, especially if it means I need to say please every time too. Like, no thanks. I think the trigger words cumbersome enough as it is. But
one fun thing they did have is that you know, they kind of have voice profiles now where they know who's talking. This is Google, obviously.
Right.
They let you now set a different voice for the user. So if we both shared a Google Home and you spoke to it, it would give you one voice. And then if I spoke to it, it could give me a different voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a very good way of without having to say, I know you are Benjamin. If it just gives you the voice that's unique to me in the household, then you know it's got the right one. Like, I thought that was a really clever little touch there.
That is nice. And I do male Siri on all of my devices, but then I do female Siri on the Kitchen Home Pod just because it's like the family shared one. The one in my office is male. The one in the kitchen is female. And also it like helps me like continue to hear the female voice and how good it is compared to the other voices. But that's clever. It's like, it's more personal too. If it's like you have a preference of like which assistant,
And they have like 8 choices versus obviously like the 2 on HomePod.
Yeah. I thought they had, John Legend, the artist John Legend is one of the voices, which, got a good response, I guess, but like, I don't love the idea of like a celebrity voice for the assistant. I think that's on like cheesy territory too.
I would not be applauding if Apple announces like you can get Taylor Swift to be the HomePod voice.
Yeah, Kanye
West. I just
West
think it's so cheesy and like.
Yeah, it's like I would await the day that goes away. it's not what I want from Siri.
Like, you want a human voice, like as human as possible, but you don't want it to be like recognizable as anyone but this AI robot, whatever you want to call it.
Something about it, it's like a ringtone level. I don't know. But so much of the Google stuff, like I don't think I participated in like snarky Twitter that day, because it's just so much of it is, Apple, hope they do that sometime. But also there's a lot of stuff that Apple and Siri need to do that's not like, you know, next level demo stuff, but just the basic, you know, and so it's...
And there's some things like they have battery saver for Android, like that uses AI to make it smarter about using your battery. It's like, okay. And then it's like auto brightness. You can now have AI enhanced auto brightness. And they said every time that you change your brightness on your phone, it doesn't remember based on the situation. Like, I have auto brightness on and I don't fiddle around with it that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me neither.
And like, it's nice, and I'm sure it's, but a lot of the things they announced this year, especially for like Android, was like a, you know, at most like a 5% improvement over what was there before.
Yeah,
it's like AI enhanced brightness. It's like, great. I don't think anyone, if you just added the feature and didn't tell anyone, I guarantee nobody would notice.
Yeah, and there's always the issue of like which Android phones get the new updates. You know, I think there was about 12 that could run the beta yesterday. And that's not a new story. And I kind of look at it as like there are Android phones, and then there are feature phones that run Android, and they might even be like good smartphones. But I kind of look at them as like feature phones. If they can't run the newest version on day one, then they're just like the equivalent of like a new feature phone. You know, and that they do
have a slightly different system to iOS though, where like they're a lot more set independent components, so you can get many of the new features even if you don't have the latest operating system.
Yeah,
like for instance, the assistant stuff is like an app, right? So they can roll out updates there, and they get them even if, you know, you're still stuck on Lollipop or whatever version you're on. The other thing I just want to flag is that for maps, they had this new augmented reality walking direction mode,
mm-hmm.
where you basically hold up the camera vertically and it puts arrows on the streets of where you need to walk. So, you know, normally you like peer down your phone and it has the tracking thing and it shows the direction you're walking in, and you kind of spin around in a circle to know which way's forward. I do that constantly because I don't drive, so I use walking directions all the time. And then, but you basically hold up your phone and it just puts arrows on the screen of where you need to walk.
Uh-huh.
And there's a little map below, so you still know where you're going, essentially.
Yeah. One
feature. Part of maps from next month. This is actually something they are launching very soon. They had some other stuff where like it overlays points of interest and stuff, which sounded more like tech demo, future, random, you know, wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of just hold up your phone, you've got arrows to know where to walk. Great feature. And something like that is what I expected Apple was building up to in the WWDC 2017 keynote, right? Because they did indoor maps and they did AR kit and augmented reality. And I was like, they're going to use it in one of their flagship apps. They're going to put maybe Street View into maps. And then there'll be some arrows that are laid on the ground so you know where to walk. And it's going to be great. And it combines everything together. And they didn't really do any of that. Like, right. There's not really an Apple app that uses ARKit in any meaningful way. Like, you can't go, here's the Apple usage of AR in your phone right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Google I/O is still ongoing. So, like, every day there's more stuff that kind of drips out. One thing I saw today tweeted out was someone had tweeted from a session where Google Assistant can, you know, so, like, their version of Siri can make routines, which is like their version of kind of automation stuff, respond to your alarm clock. So I'm not quite sure if that makes it all the way to set your Android phone alarm clock to be your wake up time, and then your smart home automation for like your good morning equivalent can like your bedroom lights come on, that kind of thing. But that is in the ballpark of like what I want to see from HomeKit one day, someday, is have your good morning scene be triggered on by whatever time you set, you know, one of your alarms for. The alarm maybe could even be like your bedtime wake up alarm, you know, the one that's special and works with HealthKit. If only all these things could work together, that would be great. One of the things about I/O every year is it's always right before WWDC, and there's always a little bit of stuff from last year's WWDC, but their take on it, and then some things that we just can't wait to see. But it's always been about a year since we got new stuff from Apple, so everyone's like tense and ready for new stuff to come out. And then it's just going to happen. Like we're weeks away from, you know, having our, kind of our moment. You know, so
Apple's looking rusty.
Yeah,
Google are so far ahead. It's like, I know. And I wouldn't say it if I didn't think it was true, but I know in 3 weeks' time, everyone will be lording over whatever Apple announces as the next great thing. Because even if it's not the future of artificial intelligence and machine learning, they're going to roll out stuff that people will like and
be
happy with.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always good Apple takes on stuff. So we'll, I'm looking forward to that. All right, today, something that's been not responded to so well on Twitter, but who cares, is Hodinkee, which is a kind of a high-end watch website, had an interview that they published from Johnny Ive, and the editor-in-chief of Hodinkee, which is – they've got like a new print version of the website where they published like a physical book of content, and you can buy it for around $30. And this is volume two of that, and it includes an interview with Johnny Ive, but they've got a version of that on the website you can read as well, where Johnny's interviewed largely about the watch and like his take on like the watch world and the Apple Watch and you know, all that. One of the things I took away was from a photo, which is, which Apple Watch does Johnny Ive have? When I saw him in person last October, it was the white ceramic watch with, I think, the white band, and it was Series 3 with the red crown. Couldn't see the watch face. In the photo, he has a yellow sport band with the white ceramic watch, which means he changes the band. I am curious if he's pairing that with, you know, the one that comes with the ceramic has a ceramic pen, but the ones that you buy in a store, they have silver or black pens. And I'm wondering if that has a silver pen with the white ceramic, or if Johnny has his own, you know, bands made with ceramic pens. I think that'd be pretty cool if it actually was ceramic and not silver on the side. It was with the Explorer watch face, which showed LTE signals, so his iPhone wasn't nearby. And then he had three complications, as you do, with the workout complication, the heart rate complication, and weather on the bottom. And it just made me think, like, Johnny checking his heart rate, Johnny using the workout app, like, you know, he's always wearing like painter's pants and you know, button down shirt or something, and it made me think like Johnny in like workout clothes in that context. So, I wonder if like that is really his watch face that he's using like, you know, regularly, or if it was just like quick change to one that's not in watchOS 5 or something. I don't know. There was some. I thought it was a really interesting like interview. The beginning of it had – it was like a long introduction that kind of set the stage for the interview. But then once you get to the actual back and forth, it's just laid out. Here's a question. Here's an answer. And I thought it was pretty good because it wasn't just like the questions that you think are obvious or that you think are kind of in bounds. Like they asked the guy asked about the gold Apple Watch, and like he literally asked – how many has Apple sold? Which I would never think to ask because I would always know Apple's not going to say. And in the piece, you kind of see like Apple interject maybe where they you know, he says like Apple doesn't release numbers, they tell me. But then Johnny has an answer, you know, he said something around the idea of like, we liked working with a material that we didn't need to make in volume.
So, like, they taught us about new materials and we had fun doing it or something.
Yeah, yeah. And what was your takeaway from this piece?
Yeah, I there was a lot of like Twitter action where like they just, the idea was like the Hodinkee guy just kind of let Ive off with simple, straightforward questions. And I didn't think it was really true. Like, before I clicked on the article, I could envision in my head kind of how it was going to go. They were going to ask about watches that weren't the Apple Watch. They were going to ask about inspiration for the Apple Watch. And they were going to ask about how well the Apple Watch is doing. And it covered those categories pretty on the ball. And they are, again, like you said, it seemed like the Hodinkee person isn't as clued in as to what would be like on topic and off topic for an Apple. You know, obviously there's a PR guy with Ive there, make or a woman checking on, you know, what's being said and kind of moving the interview forward. But like, you know that if you ask about sales numbers, if you ask about sales numbers of the Apple Watch Edition, the gold one, Apple doesn't tell you sales numbers of any of the Apple Watches. So it would be a fruitless endeavor. But he asked the question, and that's a drilling question, because obviously the implication is the Apple Watch Edition didn't sell very well, right?
Right.
And so if you're just an easygoing interviewer letting Apple off left and right, I don't think you'd ask that stuff.
Right.
And he did. And obviously, Johnny did give an answer, and then they're never going to tell you what the numbers are. I don't think it takes a brain scientist to realize they didn't sell that many of them. And they dropped it, so clearly it wasn't a raving success. I think the ceramic has done a lot better for him. Yeah, I couldn't get on board with the Twitter train of negativity.
Yeah.
It was about what I expected. I'd say it's slightly better than The Shape of Things to Come from, you know, The New Yorker from last year. Like, it goes in a bit more detail. They kind of highlight more that the Apple Watch was something that was post Steve Jobs, and he even says like Apple was trying to find its trajectory, like,
yeah,
looking,
yeah,
for something to invest in. And like, the Apple Watch clearly is like Tim Cook's first baby, really, like the first post Steve product.
Yeah, the person writes it in the beginning and even kind of frames it as, this is not a runaway hit yet. Apple, you know, you don't see one everywhere like you do a Mac or iPhone, you know, say iPhone. Which, in reading that, I was kind of thinking, you know, I do go to coffee shop. It wasn't this way in year one or two, but like now, I don't think I can go out in public and not see an Apple Watch on somebody. Like,
I agree. Like, you know, it's got so much more prevalent, like, post-Christmas.
Yeah, every holiday they just pop up more and more. It's like – and I wonder, like – I do wonder how much does this person use that as more than just a watch, or like – and it doesn't matter. Like, if they just use it for alerts, that's great. And I don't always ask – like, I don't think I've ever asked anyone, like, how do you feel with that? And people would always ask that when the watch was brand new. I was like, well, how do you like it? I was like, oh, it's complicated, you know. But I would just say, like, I like the fitness stuff a lot, you know, and that gets to the point. But I wonder, like, how do people respond to, like, when you see them in public everywhere? But I think that it is, like, pretty common now. And I don't live in, like, a major city. It's a – you know – it's South Mississippi. It's like a small area, but it feels common as iPhones, like, almost, you know.
I wouldn't go quite that far.
Well, like, so seeing an iPhone in the first few years, like, was very rare. But then eventually, it was like, you don't have to be crazy rich to own an iPhone. You just need to have, you know, a phone plan. And it is not like in the same numbers, you know, yet, obviously, but it feels like that, where it's like, you're not like, oh, an iPhone in the wild. It's like, oh, it's, you know, just another person. But I thought it was nice. Hodinkee has reviewed, I think, like, every Apple Watch that they don't always, I think, I don't know if they're like in the embargo zone, but they always have like a really different take than like, here's the tech in it. It's always like, here is how this exists in the world of luxury watches too. And like for the Series 3, they had the ceramic one. I'm not sure anyone else had a review unit of a ceramic watch. But so I've been reading those since they first appeared. And then Johnny kind of like, I think it's just like one of the, you know, there have been a few of these interactions with this person before. And so he's kind of casual. And he mentions like, he references the person's Series 3 review a few times. Like, he actually read it and, you know, cares. And the guy asked about, what is – I think the question was, like, around, like, what do you think – how does the rest of the watch world treat you, or, you know, how do you exist in that world? And Johnny references the guy's review, the comments on the review, like the commenters leaving comments, which blew me away. It was just like, I kind of really hate internet comments personally. I'm not a big fan of reading them. Like the better way to reach me is like Twitter or email, because comments are just filled with like negativity, and it's just like, it's not the best place for me to spend my time. But to know that Johnny Ive like not only read the review, but then read what like people were posting under the review, which is like not something I would imagine. But he was like, people in the comments of your, you know, review from the Watch world, basically, I think we're unnecessarily, you know, upset. It's like, huh, Johnny Ive reading comments. Okay. You know, because I just picture like Johnny Ive is like, you know, he's a person, but he's not like a normal person, like average. You know, he doesn't like tweet out, you know, dumb jokes kind of thing. So.
You always envision him as like the Zen human that like wakes up, thinks about design for a few hours, and then, you know, spends the evening with his family and then goes to bed. Like,
yeah, his design lab like plays like, you know, electronic music, and it's just like a trance in there. You know, he's got twin boys, and that's like chaos, and there's got to be a mess associated with it. It's a cleaner mess than like my mess, you know, but. Yeah, reading comments. All right.
I like the way it references that he's wearing the same blue coat that apparently he designed himself. Like, now that's classic Johnny Ive, right? He can't just wear any old coat. He's got to design his own coat.
It had fancy cuffs on it. And by the way, he mentions both his first, you know, nicer watch, as well as like his a watch that is not the Apple Watch that he admires, and he kind of like actually discusses that he doesn't get to wear those watches as much anymore, but that there's one that he does admire, at least like for its design, and kind of explains it. And the way I read it, like, wasn't him saying, I never wear non-Apple watches anymore, that he still values his, you know, $50,000 watch or whatever. And then maybe even sometimes wears it, you know, and then maybe wonder like, what is that? You know, is it in public and kind of thing. But then I went to go look at the watch that he referenced, and I noticed that they sell cufflinks for the watch separately. And I, you know, tweeted out that Apple should sell cufflinks for the Apple Watch Edition. And one of my colleagues replied and said, you know, yeah, but Apple will find a way for them to be like $2,000 or something. And I looked at the price of the cufflinks that were sold with his watch that he picked, and they're like $5,000, which is like a whole other world for me. Like I kind of look at the watch as like, there's whenever Johnny talks about it, and it's like he talks about the health stuff, you know. But it's a lot about like high level what a watch is, like the miniaturization of like a tower clock into a wristwatch, and like their take on it, and like, you know, they do that with computers, or they do it with watches, but it's a lot of like luxury and fashion. But then like if like you know, Jay Blahnik or Tim Cook or Jeff Williams talks about the watch, it's like mostly about like health tracking and fitness stuff, and it's like different worlds. But I like to kind of peek into this Johnny stuff every now and then. And I thought it was
so the watch cool piece that he says is his like favorite normal watch is the Philip Nautilus.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know. I've never seen this watch before. But
yeah, me neither.
Looking at it now, it has the same hands as the Apple Watch's hands.
Yeah.
You know, like the cricket bat style with the thin bit, and then it bulks out into like this rounded oblong.
Yes.
So basically, Johnny Ive looked at his watch he loved before, and then when they were making WatchOS, he stole the look of the hands.
Right. And it's not exactly a circular face, and it's not exactly a rectangle face. It's like kind of, you know, a round rec situation. Where like the face may be more round, but like the roundness of the watch itself is like, it's kind of more like rounded rectangle to me. And I kind of saw like the outside of the Apple Watch in that too. But yeah, I mean, so the piece you referenced a year ago was the public interview of by the New Yorker, which I got to attend and see Johnny Ive like be interviewed in public. And then there's a piece before that, which I think was like 2015 or so, by the New Yorker.
And it has the same name.
Yeah, which was like, I mean, I was really happy with that piece because that was like really long and really detailed. I think like this is in that ballpark of like interesting things about Apple and Johnny and like talking about, you know, things. So I liked it. I know that it wasn't what everyone else, a lot of other people said, but I liked it. It was a cool piece.
I thought if you said watch website plus Johnny Ive, here's an interview, it came out exactly as I was expecting it to, so I was very pleased with it.
Okay. All right. So speaking of Watch, let's continue where we left off from last week, where we go into future releases and do our not prediction but wish list for WatchOS 5. So last week we talked about tvOS 12. I eventually turned that into a story on 9to5 Mac. I've already written my WatchOS 5 wish list story as the Apple Watch fan. I wrote that first, published last month. And then we're going to discuss that now. And then also you have your wish list too. So want me to go first this week?
Go first. I did it first last week. We take turns.
All right. The thing with Apple Watch and WatchOS and WatchOS 5 is that WatchOS is still pretty new. The WatchOS 2 is basically like WatchOS 1.5. You know, it was not a whole year later. It was like later that year. And it is a lot of stuff left to do. A lot of like really, really obvious things. Mainly around streaming audio, because right now you can stream Apple Music and you can stream Apple Radio, which does include like some talk radio, sports stuff, anything that's on Apple Music Radio, you can stream, which is really cool, especially over cellular and using AirPods. But you cannot stream podcast, really, like and sync it with your iPhone podcast player, sync the playback, have a subscription. There's a really good app called Outcast, which I think is the best take on it yet, and I think there's some cool new features coming for that soon. But my podcast player of choice is Apple's podcast app for a few reasons. I know Overcast is another popular choice, and I wish Overcast could do a good job of having like, you know, a good watch app, but it's not allowed to yet because they're on developer tools. But I want to see at least WatchOS 5 have a dedicated podcast app like they did with music. And, you know, if not, also allow developers to create their own as well. And it's just as simple as right now my watch has cellular. It has the ability to play audio to like my headphones, and I can play music, and I can even play like, you know, talk radio over Apple Radio and the radio app. But I can't do podcasts, and that's what I listen to about half the time. So if I want to go out for a walk or a run without my iPhone, I can't do it and listen to podcasts unless I'm doing kind of a workaround with Outcast. It's been on the list for a while. I think it's not crazy that they haven't done it yet, because like the Apple Watch Series 3 launched without Apple Music streaming. Like it was promised, but it was in a 0.1 update with 4.1. So that makes me hopeful that we'll see it this year, because with music, it was like a premier feature of what the Series 3 watch can do, and it wasn't ready on day one yet. It took time. And maybe WatchOS 5 is the time whenever the podcast app makes its way over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue against it, right? It's just like dumb and obvious. Why doesn't it have a podcast app?
Yeah, and I've
mentioned... let's just hope it syncs better than the HomePod's podcast app.
That's just a disappointment in so many ways. I tweeted today that I had played several hours of the talk show podcast on my iPhone, and then I was in my office and wanted to play it on the HomePod. So I told Siri to play it on the HomePod, and it started at the beginning of the episode. And so I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll just go back to the iPhone. I'll AirPlay it from where I left off. But it synced the progress from HomePod to iPhone. So it's linked to the beginning of the show, so I lost all progress. I just had to guess where it was. Very annoying. But anyway, if they can work on syncing, by all means, please bring it to the Apple Watch. I would love that. And I also think that it, you know, Apple has another app that does audio that should stream to the watch, which is iBooks. I bought a few iBooks so far that are audiobooks, and I have a good experience with playing this back from my iPhone using AirPlay to the HomePod, where it should also play natively. But there was, you know, like I have found a few times where I'm deep in an audiobook, and I also want to get my workout in and like leave the house and not bring my phone. And right now I need to bring the phone if I want to do that with an audiobook. So to bring it to the Apple Watch.
Yeah, that is both sensible and plausible with the, you know, supposedly iBooks revamp. Mm-hmm. That we've already kind of seen them rebrand iBooks to Books and then flip it back and yeah. In the iOS 11 beta period. So we're kind of expecting some sort of big Books update, probably yeah. In iOS 12. So if they're going to update the iOS app, it'd certainly be logical for them to bring it to the watch finally.
Yeah, but if you are someone who wants to, like, go do a workout or, like, leave your phone behind and go with your watch and, like, listen to people talking because, like, that's something that you enjoy doing, I don't think it's super advertised or super obvious, but you can do the radio app, which is separate from the music app on watchOS 4.1 or later. And it has, like, ESPN, I think maybe Bloomberg News, NPR, you know, different like talk radio sources of news where people talk and you can stream it to your watch. And it's like, that, but podcast, please. So, and that seems like harder to do because it's like live broadcasting, not like streaming from a server, like a you can like download ahead of time kind of thing. So, yeah. The next thing on my list is the Siri Watch Face. I have been really happy with it since I mentioned a few weeks ago, changing the complications around, where I've got the date always, the weather always, no Siri complication because it doesn't really do anything but look cool. And then it was watchOS 4.3 that added Apple Music and activity as data sources. So my rings are often on the Siri Watch Face, if not showing, scrollable. And the cool thing about that is I would never have the sunset complication like always on my watch face instead of something else. It would be like wasted space most of the time. But when there's not much going on in the rest of the day, it does appear. I'm like, oh, I've got 1 hour and 17 minutes left of daylight. That's useful. The home app will show like good morning as a tile there. I can like tap it and you know run the automation if I want to. That, but for third-party complications or third-party data sources. So you can already change what you show there. I turn off photos and news and stocks because I don't want those like clogging up the timeline there. But I would want to have things or, you know, if there was a third-party podcast player, like a new episode there, that kind of stuff would be very cool. Like it kind of amazes me that you get the best alert system for Apple Music from the Siri Watch Face, which not everyone has an Apple Watch that uses Apple Music. But to get an alert on like a lock screen equivalent about a new playlist that they make for you, you need to use the Siri Watch Face for that and not the iPhone or like lock screen, the kind of thing. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, that is pretty stupid. Yeah. Kind of bouncing off that, one of the things on my list is taking like the intelligence of whatever algorithm picks what to show in that timeline on the Siri Watch Face, mm-hmm. but kind of, and I've kind of wanted this as a thing for like if you have a complication, so you have like the box for a complication, right? And this is on any face,
yeah.
Have that be able to have more than one state of like you can put weather, calendar, and heart rate in the same bundle, right? So you have like 3-in-1.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe if you like double tap on the complication, it switches to the next one, and then you double tap and it just like loops around. So you can basically have more than one thing on the same spot. But then you could amp it up by using like the Siri intelligence to like contextually show you when you look at the face, like which one should be there by default. So if you've got like weather, calendar, home, when you're at home, it defaults to home. You know,
exactly.
In the morning, it shows weather.
I mean, like, one thing that they do is if you're near a location with a pass or a wallet pass, and like Starbucks, for example, it will present your Starbucks card as one of the tiles on the Siri Watch Face. On the iPhone, like the lock screen is what it goes on the lock screen. If it's like a close flight or like close to a business with a rewards card. But on the watch, you've got to be on the Siri Watch Face to get that feature or the notification center, which brings me to my next point, which is a lot of times I'll get an alert on my watch, like a new message, and I'll miss it. So I need to swipe down to see notification center to see what the alert was. And it feels like it's almost a similar timeline view of like the Siri Watch Face. It feels like any recent alert should also be like a tile that shows up for like 10 minutes or so, some period of time. Like someone messages me, then I don't think I should have to swipe down to see that again. I think I should just see it as one of the tiles on the Siri Watch Face. And because like having the red dot and then the action to swipe down feels like working backwards, you know? So, and I think these are all like totally possible for watchOS 5. Like, you know, they've already got the section in the watch app on the iPhone where you manage your data sources and they have third-party complications. You know, treat those data sources like a complication kind of thing and just make the Siri Watch Face. I think the Siri Watch Face is like, I didn't use it for this first several months, but lately using it, it feels like it's a whole other version of watchOS than like every other watch face. So I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember when like the watch was just before it came out, they said they experimented with like a timeline UI for the entire watch.
Yes, yes.
And that's kind of what the Siri face is becoming.
I think that's kind of like where it began, was like the abandoned UI that was kind of like what Pebble had introduced around the same time. And they were like, we tried that, but it was too complicated. You know, wasn't quite right. And they ended up with what they shipped. I think that this is like born from that, you know. And I don't think it's for everyone, but I think that it's like the most smartwatch gadgety thing about it. And it's called they kind of like use Siri and intelligence like interchangeably. And there's not really anything Siri about it except for the intelligence stuff, you know. And I hope they make it, they do more things with it this year and not just say like, that's what it does year two, you know. And then the next thing on my list is Control Center. This is something that was a good idea at the time, but they've slowly added more features to it, more toggles. And it's just really kind of crazy now how many things that are in that list, and you can't rearrange them. You can't toggle things out of the list. You can't really do any customization. And to me, a lot of the decisions of like where things are located, like, theater mode is way below other toggles. And like, you might want to, maybe we want to use that more often, or like muting the watch is a scroll for me. Unmuting it is also a scroll. Like choosing AirPods is a scroll, but like seeing your battery, which you might not even care about anymore because it's so good, or, you know, making your phone scream. These are all above that, which I think is just nuts. I really hope that this doesn't continue to be a podcast talking point, because it needs to be acknowledged, and it hasn't quite been yet. They just keep making it worse.
Yeah, there was a spate where this would literally be the topic of discussion every single week on the show.
Every update of WatchOS is like, did they change it? No, they added a new tile. It's worse now.
Oh, my God, I accidentally tapped it. Now the phone's pinging. So my phone's screaming.
Exactly. I mean, if you do theater mode, you scroll down for that. And what theater mode does is it also activates like the mute for you if mute isn't already on. But then if you swipe up, like you might just see mute first and say, oh, unmute. But you're still in theater mode, where your watch face won't turn on unless you turn theater mode off or like tap the screen. So it's like, it's just really not organized well. And a lot of these things you can like say, you can tap into them, right? Like battery you can tap into, but it's not obvious that that's like a new screen. It's like that pops up because some things are toggles and some things are like new screens. And there's just so many things there now. And it's just...
One purist day thing that really bugs me is that some of the tiles... Well, if you just tap on them but don't let go, they highlight, and some of them just don't highlight.
Yeah.
And until you let go, you don't even know what's going to happen. Like, it's really weird.
Yeah.
At the top, you have – on Wi-Fi, does it show your network name? Is that correct?
If you're not connected to your phone, it does.
Yeah. For I'm on the non-cellular watch, and for some reason, it only shows me signal bars. I have two network names at home because for some stupid way I set up the house, it has two SSDs – two network names for different parts of the house. So,
yeah.
But I can't tell what that is at all. And for some reason, that's a cellular-only feature, even though it's a Wi-Fi thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They need to, like... The WatchOS 1 control center was... Which was really, like, one of those glances. Was such a better organization. You had three things in one row, and it was easily tappable. Like, I don't see why they have to put two... They had, like, three circles on one line. Now you've got, like, two massive bubbles that... Most of the time, don't really tell you what's going on anyway. And it infuriates me that you have to scroll to see everything. It's annoying enough that they put what I think are the most important things at the bottom. But the fact you have to scroll at all is just, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any... It doesn't... On iPhone, they changed it in iOS 11 to put everything on one page and you didn't have to scroll anywhere. But on watch, they keep adding these features, and they keep just plopping them on the bottom.
Yeah, it's the Virgin Wall Street Journal had a bad experience with WatchOS or Apple Watch Series 3 with Wi-Fi, so let's add a Wi-Fi toggler now. It's like, oh, another button. I've written so far three stories on 9to5 Mac in three different years of like, these are features I want to see on WatchOS, and a few of them have come true. Like Siri gets a voice when it gets a better processor. We've seen the Reminders app come to the Apple Watch. We've not yet seen Notes, which I think is a really good candidate for WatchOS because you can do email. You can do photos.
That was on my list. Notes, yeah, because
but
you can do
note.
You can do lists in Notes, like that's Reminders straight up. But just to make a text note,
yeah.
I don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, podcast was on my list years ago. It hasn't happened yet, so we'll see there. But there's a few things that are like kind of crazy that I think just need attention. One of them is if you're on a phone call on the Apple Watch, you can't multitask. Like, you can't be on the phone. I've now toggled my control center and now I'm getting dings. But if you can't be on the phone and then like go and check your calendar, for example, like multitasking you can on an iPhone, I think that's probably got the processor power for it. They just haven't turned it on like the newer watches that can probably handle it. You get a message that says end call to continue. So I think that needs to be needs some TLC. On the calendar view, if the day is the last day of the month, you can't scroll to the next day to see what day is March 15th, for example. You're stuck to one month that you're in, including
and you can't tap on any day other than the current day, because if you tap on anywhere else on that overview, it just zooms into the current day anyway.
Yeah. And I find that I've had a better experience with Fantastical on the Apple Watch, because it can't go like way ahead of time in the future, but it can do like the next few weeks. So if it's like the last day of the month, then you can see what's going on in a few days. So that just seems like something that they can probably handle. And then
they could do 30 days worth of events and the ability to actually just see what the date is next week.
And I think the big thing that people really want is sleep tracking from the Apple Watch itself, not a third-party app, because third-party apps are good and fine and everything. But people are doing sleep tracking with the watch already, and I think that Apple could probably do some pretty good stuff there. You know, they could probably have a different take on it. And they bought Beta a year ago. We haven't seen anything yet from it. Maybe it requires new hardware. Maybe there's like a dedicated sensor for it that gets added to a future watch. I think they're getting pretty close. But we haven't seen it yet. So hopefully soon. Last thing I'll say before I throw it over to you is one thing I do a lot of times with email to keep a good sorted out inbox is I have folders that emails go into. Like, most of my personal emails are receipts, and so they go through the receipts folder. Some of them are business expenses, so I have a special folder for that, and then others are just like trash or archived for just saving. But nothing like lives in the inbox, and so on the watch, I can do a lot of things. Like, I can reply, I can delete things, but I can't sort it into a folder, and I think it's something they could do. So I'm requesting it every year, I think, now, but.
Yeah, you can go back and see the unread smart mail box and stuff, but individual folders you can't access on the watch.
Yeah, and you can't send things to a folder either. So even though you can do more complex things like reply. So WatchOS 5, please. What's on your list?
Okay, well, I knew you were going to cover those kind of bases.
I read the story.
So I tried to go a bit more obscure because the watch is still so new that you could probably make endless lists about every single app on the watch and the system itself. One of the things I really want to see come back is a proper way to see the activity graphs in the activity app. Because in WatchOS 1, you could have full screen graphs of your move go across the day, your exercise, your stand across the day, and see the calories, and you see a number of calories on top of the graph. And then in WatchOS 2 and WatchOS 3, they kind of simplified it into just this kind of small row of little bars that you can't really tell what's going on in, so I don't really know why they're there at all. But I miss having the big graph. I love clicking on the move graph and seeing the whole thing across the whole day. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to see that not just for today, but for yesterday and the last week. From the watch, you can only see your activity for the current day at the moment. So
yeah,
expanding that out would be a big help for me. And related to that is I hate how the Apple Watch activity notifications and stand reminders only show on the watch. If I have my phone and I'm using my phone, every other notification will pop up on my phone, right? Because that's the priority device. But the activity stuff makes my watch vibrate. And it's like, can you not just mirror the notification to the phone? I get it, right? I know it's coming from the watch, but that's an implementation detail, not what I should have to worry about. If I need to stand, you can just give me a notification on my phone and I can carry it and do it, right? Why do I need to look down when I'm using my phone and every other notification doesn't work like that? It doesn't make any sense. I had tweaks to the home screen grid. Now, everyone likes to complain about the honeycomb. I'm actually a much bigger fan of the honeycomb overall. Like, I get the concept. I love the magnification. I think it's really nice and, like, fluid. I've always said, like, I think the magnification factor just needs to be tweaked upwards slightly. Like, the icons that are on the edges are just slightly too small. So if they made it a touch bigger, I think it would just make tap targets slightly easier to hit, and it would look slightly more accessible than their current, like, even the outer ring, not the app in the middle, the outer ring is, like, slightly too small for my liking.
You've got the smaller watch,
the crown a tad. It makes it big enough.
Yeah. You've got the smaller of the two watches, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it probably affects me more.
Right.
Well, I also saw this knockoff Apple Watch, where they kind of, like, replicated the icons, but they clearly hadn't bothered to recreate the actual home screen. So what they had was the clock face in the middle, and then eight icons around the outside of the clock face. And you could swipe between pages, and it would keep the clock in the middle and just change the icons around the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, if they wanted to go for something more drastic, like, if you assume that people aren't going to use that many apps on a watch, you can actually make it a lot simpler just by having pages that you can swipe between. And they offer, at the moment, they offer the honeycomb grid, and they offer just, like, the list. The list mode is alphabetical only. I would actually consider using that if you could put the apps in the order that you could choose. So mm-hmm. you could put your most used apps at the top. Like, I don't think alphabetically. I don't know about you. But if they could make it alphabetical, I'd be more on board with that style. I also think they should learn from what they did with the iPod Nano, where they just had four icons on the rectangle, and you could just swipe between pages of four icons at a time. Cool interface there.
I
think that would work well on the watch, but obviously there's nothing like that at the moment.
Yeah, the dock, which is the side button click, shows you apps either that you pick and save in a favorites list, or just recently use in a kind of timeline order. That's changed from introduction to last year, where it went from scrolling one way to scrolling the other way and giving you options to how you want it to populate. And that gets kind of there, and maybe, like, it's kind of weird to me that there's, like, dock and then home screen, and, you know, like, maybe the two, like, I mean, with WatchOS 1, there weren't two different things. It was, like, your home screen, you know, and they broke it out later on and got rid of the friends thing, which I think was kind of, like, cool, fine, it's gone. But maybe, like bridging, like, the things there could work out. Have you tried this option? If you go to settings, and you go to general and accessibility and turn on reduce motion, it changes the way that the honeycomb looks. So it does a lot of things, but it changes the way the honeycomb looks. And instead of making the outer app smaller to, like, hide the fact that it's a square display that actually ends and has bezel, it just shows you where the apps end and, like, you're within a box. That kind of gets close to what you're talking about, and, like, it's not, like, fluid feeling. It, like, you're just kind of, like, painting around, like, a static image of, like, the static honeycomb. And then your dock looks different too. Like, it just kind of rolls in instead of, like, overlaps in a different way. But maybe something about how that looks could be, like, an option, you know?
Yeah, I'm basically looking for, like, a midpoint between the current way it works and the accessibility mode, right? So, like, you still have the magnification effect, because I think it's really cool, but just the rings that are, you know, priority in the middle just need to be slightly bigger, because I still think they're just slightly too small.
Yeah, and maybe with the rumored watch redesign that has, according to retired KGI securities analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, a 15% larger display within, you know, what we think is the same casing size, then maybe that can address that concern for you without even needing
that. That would, if he did it, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
I want other apps to be able to make notifications like what the Messages app can do. Now, this is hard to explain, but if you get a Messages notification on the watch, you can reply from the notification, and the notification doesn't go away. Like, the notification is the Messages thread.
You're almost in the app, but it's not opening the app yet.
Yes, and it's incredibly fluid. You can see the typing indicator of the other person responding. You can watch video. You can watch the pictures in line. You can reply again. You can have, like, a full conversation from the notification. And I would love if they brought that to, like, more apps in the system and third-party apps. Like, if you had, like, a workout and you could, like, you get the reminder, you could start the workout from the notification. And it's all, like, you don't have to go digging for the application and then click start. You could, like, say, you need to do a 7-minute brisk walk. And you press start. And it's subtle, but it makes a big difference. Like, instead of having to then jump into the app, do the countdown, like, the notification just, like, morphs into the app, and it's doing something immediately. Like, yeah. And doing that with, obviously, third-party apps would be a big deal as well. Like, if you could do it with, like, Fantastico, you have, like, your calendar events in the notification. You could edit them, tick them off, scroll through days. Like, it just saves you having to dig through to the actual app and just doing more stuff up front. And I use it for messages constantly. So it frustrates me that I can't do it elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this probably ties into the number one, which is some better watch kit replacement, maybe better watch kit, an unconstrained SDK for developers, which would enable all sorts of interactions and improvements like we've talked through countless times before. And that would also allow you to do like more interactive notifications, because right now the notifications from third-party apps are basically like themed snapshots. So you like kind of lay out a storyboard of what the notification looks like, and you just change the text depending on which one came in. Like, that's a slight approximation, but you get the idea. It's not like a live view with interaction and keyboard input and going back and forth and putting bubbles on the screen. And like in the messages notification, if you get a fireworks and lasers, they come up in the notification. Like, it really is like you're inside the application,
right?
So bringing that to other apps would be a huge deal. I also want custom watch faces. I'm going to say this to the day I die. The Apple Watch needs more watch faces. Numerals is my favorite face, and it was introduced later than WatchOS 1. Easily top three best improvement they've ever made to it, adding that face. I want more watch faces. Maybe that's made by Apple. Preferably proper watch faces, not like Toy Story gimmicks. Things like that. If they want to bring it out so anyone can make a watch face, have a watch face gallery store, you can add them from the app. Apple can prioritize even good ones and feature them, sell them, etc., etc. Make an app store for watch faces. I would be all over that, both in adopting new faces and making my own. Like, I'd love to make a custom watch face.
Yeah.
And then an always on option.
Mm-hmm.
I have plenty of battery in my watch. I charge it every night. If I could have like a grayscale watch hands just sitting there all day long until I raise my wrist and it actually fills in, like pops in the rest of the content, I would again be all over that. And also, I've noticed recently that like if you raise your wrist when you're in the middle of a workout, I don't know if I'm just imagining this, but it feels like it takes slightly longer for the screen to turn on.
I don't know.
I always do like a 30-minute workout every day, so I kind of want to know like how far I'm through it. And I raise my wrist while I'm running, it's like 27 minutes. Like, if they could just keep the timer on screen without having to turn off.
Yeah.
That being incredibly useful.
Yeah. I feel like they got to be getting there, because every year with a new hardware, we see a new radio appear from the iPhone to the watch. So, you know, first it was GPS, and then it was Sailor, and, you know, what's next? I think we're kind of caught up now. We just need, you know, maybe even more battery life improvements, or thinning it down with the current battery life that they have, or using some of that battery for more features like sleep tracking or an always-on display of some type. And I think people have thought out some really clever solutions that could work. And you know, even in the Johnny Ive piece, you know, he mentions having an old watch. You need to click a button to see the time, you know. So and that's what we're at with the Apple Watch right now, for the most part. So.
And Wear OS, Android Wear, whatever you want to call it, apart from failing on its face, the one thing it did offer that made me jealous was they had grayscale always-on watch faces that you could pick.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically, it's just the hands with maybe a little bit of maybe like the weather complication, and then when you actually fully turn your wrist, it pops back into full color with everything on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about the Siri animation right now?
We've been through this before, but...
I know.
The Siri animation needs to change, and it's not just the Siri animation, it's also the dictation waveform. Both of these waveforms, graphics, visualizations, whatever you want to call them, they are essentially static videos that play on a loop, that they move around, and they like look like waves, but they don't respond to your voice. If you stop talking, the waveform still moves. If you say a select series of words, it makes no difference to the animation. Unlike the TV, unlike the phone, unlike any other platform where you're actually talking to the Siri on the device and it actually reacts to what you're saying. On the watch, they did it in WatchOS 1 and then they changed it for no apparent reason. and I've been hating it ever since. Just make it so the waveform actually responds to what you're saying. Please. Just do it, please. Please. Like, it makes perfect sense. There's no reason why they're not doing it. It's just laziness, stupidity, they haven't noticed. I don't know what the reason is, but I don't think there's any technical limitation.
I don't think it's that we haven't mentioned
animated
it.
Watch, animated waveform that responds dynamically to the volume of what's coming into the speaker.
Yeah, yeah. I remember last year I did a story that I wrote about what future Apple Watch versions could kind of learn from the original watchOS version that I feel like Apple kind of listened to feedback and then made changes. And some of the feedback I don't think was quite right. And they've not reverted to the better, options that they had before. Like, things we mentioned, Control Center, Siri, for example. But I tracked down an Apple Watch that was unboxed, and it was a certain band color. So I knew it was from day one before that band color was discontinued. So I knew it ran watchOS 1.0. And then I realized that to pair my phone with it and to activate it, I needed to have a specific version of iOS, which was, I think, was like 8.4 or 8.3. And so otherwise it would force it to upgrade to like watchOS 2 or later. I think it was like iOS 9 or something. And so I found an iPhone 5C with that iOS version, which is like not 0.0 or like the latest, but like in the middle. And I managed to get my hands on both of those things and like actually use watchOS 1.0 again. And it was just so nice to go back and like look at Siri responsive to your voice. Control Center with not like two columns, but like three icons in a row.
And like an actual hierarchy to the controls of which is more important than the other one.
Right, right. This is good stuff. And I think like one of the things about the Siri waveform is it was flat on the bottom, like it showed the bezel. And they changed it to be like fat in the middle and like skinny in the side. So it looks like it's like the whole thing is your watch face and it just happens to be floating there. But nothing about that means make it canned loop.
And it's not just aesthetics, right? It's not just like a visual flair. I genuinely believe this has like a functional application.
Well, it makes it feel slower whenever it's not.
Yeah,
responsive.
It makes it feel laggy, right? Like it's not listening to you properly.
Yeah.
Like you can just talk whatever you want to it, and you can tell that it's not responding. Like I think I tweeted about this a couple of months ago, and people said, "Oh, it is dynamic; it moves." It's like, no, it has to move. It doesn't even have to be an accurate representation of like the actual volume of your voice, right? It just needs to do something when you talk and when you stop talking. Like you can do this on the iPhone. You ask Siri a request, watch the waveform, and then stop talking. The waveform stops moving. And if you talk quietly, it does something different. And if you talk loud, it does something different still. That's all they need, like a few stages of doing nothing, doing something really loud. And you get the experience is so much different. It feels like you're connected to what's happening. It's the equivalent of if you scroll something and it's laggy when it's scrolling.
Right.
It's
right.
Like that, but for voice. And it's even more deceptive when you're doing dictation, when it looks even more like an actual sound waveform and it goes off and does its own canned animation there as well. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Please sort this out.
Yep. All right. Anything else on your list?
I think I'll leave it at that.
Like, yeah. I mean, we obviously have a lot of things we'd like to see, but we want to be reasonable and concise. So, okay.
Just to end, you're allowed to pick one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like your one top priority, what would you choose?
Oh, podcast streaming.
I would choose custom watch faces.
Okay.
Because I really want custom watch faces and I really want to make some.
I feel chained to my iPhone when it comes to podcast playback, and I would feel unchained if the watch.
I would agree, however, that your number one request is a lot more likely.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed in writing these stories every year and kind of updating them along the way is that so many requests that are reasonable need to be carried over to the next year. And you can't ignore them because you heard about them a year ago because they're still important. It's just, you're still waiting too. So, all right. That's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are
BZA Mayo.
And also follow 95 Mac. And if you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@95mac.com. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.